So this past summer, for my 40th birthday, I treated myself to a wilderness survival course. I've always liked hiking and camping, but I was never in Boy Scouts or anything like that. And, you know, really, I just like, you know, fancy coffee and Twitter and living in the city. And so I've always been conscious of the fact that you know, were I actually stranded out in the woods, I would probably be dead in a hot second. So I sifted through the courses online to, you know, find a survival school that was neither too new age hippy dippy or too crazy ass right wing weapon stockpiling militia on the other hand. Yeah, I found one that was, you know, sort of squarely in the middle, and off I went into the hot and muggy woods of Northern Virginia in August. And so there were a few other guys on this junket, each one more manly and better suited to this type of thing than the last. I mean, there was the sort of young Navy guy with the shell-shocked eyes, and a couple of construction workers, and two frat guys, and there's a Civil War reenactor guy who was really into the old-timiness of this whole thing. And so everything that he brought was like period canvas and wool. And so within about 100 degrees out there, so within 2 hours, he smelled like underwear and cheese. Anyway, and the testosterone was so much at this thing that you know, I kept imagining the whole thing devolving into either some sort of, you know, drum circle, man hug, Iron John scene, or else that scene from the Liam Neeson movie where he fights the wolves. So the enduring impression that I have of Wilderness Survival School is that everything is hard. Everything is hard, and it is relentless. It never stops. You first have to locate a water source. Then you have to build a shelter out of leaves and sticks and so on. Then you have to build a fire. You have to find food, which involves either foraging for wild plants or, better yet, hunting small animals, setting a snare or throwing a stick at them. If you want to avoid explosive diarrhea that leads to dehydration and an agonizing death, you don't want to drink just pure river water. You want to purify it. But if you don't have any purification tablets, it involves building a fire, heating up the stones, dropping the stones in the water until it boils for a certain amount of time, and the water turns all like black and disgusting, but at least it's potable. So it doesn't stop. It's constant, and it's exhausting. And in a real survival situation, we learned that what you have to do is you have to focus your mind on something hopeful, something that you have to live for, something to return to. You know, your mom or your Netflix queue or Russell, whatever. For me, it was my wife. You know, I sort of identified that. So the instructor put us through these little tests to hone our newly acquired skills. So, for example, we practiced hunting with a stick. So we wanted to take baby steps, and so he produced a stuffed squirrel, and we practiced throwing sticks at it from 30 feet away. And let me tell you, there are a few things in life more demoralizing than hunting a stuffed animal and failing. So we did that. We also had this fire building thing where you know, the scenario was like, oh, my God, little Timmy fell down a well. He's been taken out of the well, and he has 5 minutes. You have 5 minutes to build a self-sustaining fire before little Timmy goes into hypothermia and dies. And so it had been raining for like a week before, and so all of the wood and kindling and stuff was wet. And were it up to me, the tragedy of little Timmy and his passing from hypothermia would have played out over and over again. I had a bit of a revelation-type experience one night. I was in my shelter, and the darkness out there was almost palpable, and the humidity was stifling. It was a tangible thing, and those elements combined with all the noises, the chirping of the crickets and the rustling of leaves from strange animals outside, and everything coalesced as if to form one enormous organism, one vast beast creature that rolled around fitfully and opened its single enormous eye at me, and it stared at me, and it didn't care. Nature did not give one flying shit about me, and it was horrifying. And so I concentrated on my fixed point of hope, that thing that I was living for, my wife and her skin and the little songs that she invents in the kitchen while she's cooking, and I clung to that like a spar in the ocean, and let it carry me into eventually sleep and a welcome sunrise the next morning. If you were to drop me out in the woods right now, I don't know how I would do, honestly. But I will say that these days, at night, walking my dog through Waverly, sometimes I will see a squirrel on a tree or a rabbit munching grass in the neighbor's yard, and I'll throw an imaginary stick at it, and I'll say, "Gotcha."